Okay, folks, shall we make a start? Welcome. This is the session about local currencies. It's not the session about the financial crisis. It's not a session about the theory of money. It's not a session about whether we should change the national banking regulations. They're interesting arguments, but we're not going to be engaging with them. What we're going to be talking about is the different models of local currency that have emerged around the world over the past 20 years, from local exchange trading schemes on Comox Island, Canada, 1992, time banking, the United States, late 80s, early 90s in the UK, Ithaca Hours in the United States, Berkshires in the United States, and Berkshires very much inspiring the first of the transition currencies in Totnes. Totnes going on to inspire the Lewis pounds, the Brixton pounds, and a slightly different model, the Stroud pound. Okay? So we're going to be talking about the different models of local currencies, their successes and their failures, mainly concentrating on the transition currencies, the four transition currencies. A little bit about one of the nuts and bolts. If you're thinking about setting up a local currency, what you need to think about. Sure, you'll have heard about some of the barriers to setting up viable local currency models that some of the transition currencies have come up against. So how a more experienced alternative currency model can deal with some of those. Then finishing off with a look into the future. Is the future more electronic currencies, or do we need to also think about resilience and appropriate technologies of paper-based currencies? So that's what we're going to be looking at. Okay. I'm Pete North from Liverpool University in Transition Liverpool. I'm the author of Shameless Plug, Local Codes and Local Money, which was one of the guides. I think it's pretty good. So if you want to know more about it, this is perhaps the book to look at. I'm not going to be talking too much myself about local currencies. I'm more here to be the guide, making sure that we get everything done in an hour and a half. Hi there. Before we start, could I just get you to put your hand up if you're somebody that is just thinking about a local currency, but you're not involved in one at the moment? Okay. Put your hand up if you're in the very early days of exploring a local currency, or you're just close to setting up. Okay. Yep, okay. Then put your hand up if you're involved in a more long-standing alternative currency. Okay. So has everybody put their hand up at one stage? There's people with general interest, not many people in the early days.
Wouldn't there to be a local bank?
Right, okay. Probably not really be dealing with that. Okay. More stick to the local currencies. But yeah. But that's another thing to look at, perhaps, in the sessions when we're talking about localisation and economic side of things. Yeah. Okay, so we've got some short introductions, sort of 7 to 10 minutes each, from our four representatives of the four transition currencies. First of all, I think we'll start off with Ben talking about the first one, Totnes. Then we'll move on to Amy talking about Lewis. We'll then hear from Simon Brixton, and then from Kieran talking about some of the exciting new developments that are happening in Bristol. Then we'll do a bad thing, and we'll move the tables and chairs around, even though we're not supposed to, and we'll have four tables, which we will explain a little bit later on. Okay? Has anybody got any burning issues that you'd really like us to cover? I don't propose to go around everybody because it'd take forever. Are there any burning issues that you'd really like the speakers to cover?
Do we have to have a one-to-one correspondence from the value of the alternative currency and sterling, or can we float it?
Okay. Yep, good one. Does it have to be linked to sterling at all? If it's linked to sterling, does it have to be fixed, like the transition currencies, or more floating, like Letts or Ithaca Hours?
In Somerset, we're thinking about doing a county-wide one, so just if that might be different from being a local county.
It's questions of scale. One, relationship to national currency. Two, questions of scale.
Yeah. Can I be given 2 minutes to explain our Danish local currency at the end?
You can, yes. Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Okay. Right, okay, shall we kick off with Ben then?
Okay, hi everybody. My name is Ben Brangman. I work full-time for Transition Network and I'm part of Transition Town Top Nest in two roles, one as part of the currency team and the other one as Dr. Bike. And I'll start off with a Dr. Bike comment actually. I've fixed people's bikes for free in the market on a Saturday and I've had some really interesting observations about money and relationships doing that. So I say I'll do it for free, but I'll take donations, I'll take pies, I'll take drinks, I'll take hugs, I'll take Top Nest pounds, and I'll take sterling reluctantly. Now, what happens is, I fix people's bikes, and they'll either engage in long conversation with me, and it'll be great fun, and I'll find out about them, and I'll get all my jeans fixed, because I work for a few hours on their bikes. Or they'll get me pies, or we'll have a relationship. Or they'll take 10 quid out of their pocket and they'll stick it in my top pocket and they'll walk away. So this for me is like a really, really interesting thing about what money allows us to do. And I don't propose that it's going to give any answers or any major insights, like an observation that I would never ever have had if I wasn't in service to the community in a giving away my time. So, Top Nest Pound kicked off in 2007. It's a physical currency. It's had three phases. The first phase was 300 Top Nest Pounds just handed out into circulation at an economics and livelihoods event. And there are about 20 traders in the town who accepted it. 3 months later, that was a very temporary project. 3 months later, we, after all those notes had been redeemed, actually they all disappeared. So we didn't ever get them back. We didn't ever find out where they'd all been because they had little bits of, somewhere you could write in where it was that note had been. And we realised at that point that these are not things that are easily tracked and they're not easily controlled either. So next off, we printed 10,000 Top Nest Pounds and we sold them into circulation for £9.50 for £10 worth of Top Nest Pounds as an incentive for people to buy the Top Nest Pounds. It's like, if you paid for something in Top Nest Pounds, you're getting a 10% discount. That was the... is that right? £9.50 for 10?
Yeah.
And we ran that for about 6 months, and then we didn't collect in the notes. We didn't have a kind of a cut-off period, but we decided that this was going really, really rather well, and we needed some nice new notes. So we printed up 10,000 much nicer notes, and for these we sold them into circulation at parity, one Top Nest pound for one. Pound sterling, and the reason we did this was that traders were telling us that they didn't like taking a hit on redemptions. It was like they were giving a discount, and we felt there was enough kind of loyalty and affection for the currency that people would still go in and buy it and then use it around the town. When we did the second launch, we'd gone from 20 to 50 traders. When we did the third launch, which was at the start of 2008, there were about 75. There's been two drop-offs since that time. One quite public, one just sort of dropped off. We have four issuing points in the town, so those are trading places that have said, we'll issue people so that people can come in and purchase the Top Nest Pound from them, and we have the safe, which is like the bank in the office. It's had an incredible amount of attention all around the world. It's kind of ridiculous, with people from Korea coming over and talking to me and seeing the safe. It's, you are like the finance minister of Top Nest. It's weird sort of fantasy that people build up about... about this whole thing. And if you take, there are 6,000 Top Nest Pounds in circulation, okay? The Totnes economy is 60 million, we reckon, per annum. So we're 0.001% of that economy, even at high velocity rate. And so that's really, really tiny. We're not changing the face of anything. We recognise that. The launch of the Totnes Pound was as much about starting conversations, raising awareness about money, about who produces it, what the power relationships are from producing it. And also a real key piece, which is the concept of a local economy being like a leaky bucket. You know, you build up wealth in the community in all sorts of ways, and anytime you spend that money with a trader or a business that has more connections outside of the town than inward, that money sort of disappears. In terms of what's happening now, the circulation has gone down really significantly. We're probably about 20%, maybe a tiny bit less, of when it was feeling really, really healthy. And some things that we've learned about that is the underestimation of the amount of time it takes to keep the wheel spinning and keep people interested and focused in on it. And that's a really big job. These are, you know, the relationships with the traders can be, well, I'm sure Amy will say, well, can be quite time-consuming. You know, they're usually, typical town traders are very, very busy. It's like another one on top of what they're doing. But what we have found is an incredible level of affection for the pound, even at lesser circulation rates. People still say, you know, we really love it. And we recently had another trader in the town, the biggest green supermarket, say we want to be an issuing point as well. We want to help. We want to help you. This is very proactive on their part. Help you. I think we did one exercise. Well, we talked about, you mentioned something about being backed by sterling, and that's maybe a shortcoming in it. We thought, could we back it with energy? And we got some really, really smart people in the room and had about four meetings with huge flow charts and calculations, and we couldn't find out how to back it with money. We thought it was too complex and that we wouldn't get buy-in. But, you know, somebody else who is smarter than us may be able to do that. I think the crucial point for me has been, what's the next stage? And I think we'll hear more about what the next stage is, because keeping things rolling needs, and where's this narrative going? And I'm also very aware that typically local currencies, complementary currencies, work best when there's a major sterling crisis, and we haven't quite had that yet. And we may not, so that's a question. So that's about it for me.
Right, thanks, Ben. Does anybody have any sort of questions of clarification, rather than we can debate them all later, the questions of clarification for Ben? Yeah?
When the pounds go to the traders, do they then reissue the pounds back to other people? Does it come back through your bank and you?
There are three things they can do with it. Yeah. They can give it out in change, they can change it at the bank, or they can spend it themselves.
And what do they actually choose to do with them?
I would say they don't do enough spending it themselves, so they'll give it out in change, or they'll come and redeem it at the bank. And you know, that problem of those businesses that are becoming sinks, and they're taking in lots of Totnes pounds. It's kind of an opportunity for them to look at their own purchasing and should they be buying more things locally, and kind of moving that whole kind of acceptance of the Totnes pound through the supply chain, and that's really, really tough.
Is it working from traders to suppliers? Are there suppliers that are taking Totnes pounds from the trader?
No, we've tried to work on that, but at the moment there are three types of transactions. There's consumer to consumer, consumer to business, and then business to business. And we've cracked this one.
Yeah.
We probably wouldn't use Totnes pounds for the consumer to consumer or person to person.
Birthday presents for children.
Pies. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Can I just ask a question? Have you had conversations with the council, or is there merit in talking to the council about paying the business rates in Totnes pounds?
We haven't done that, and that would be an amazing thing to be able to do. Yeah. And I think we'll hear about that from somebody.
Hear about that from Richard.
And where are you from?
London.
London.
Better Green.
One more question.
Is that a good question? Do you think it makes Totnes more resilient?
Well, judging by what happened in places like Argentina when the currency collapsed, and people looked around, you know, like, what else can we do? And they just snapped up local currency schemes that were happening and scaled them up. I would absolutely say yes. There's a, you know, that story, the town that prints its own money, is kind of gets into the cycle.
Okay,
but it's difficult to measure.
Okay, that's that question of resilience is connected up to the narrative, where is this going? If local currencies are connected to sterling at the moment, is that because they'll always be connected to sterling, or is that a way to make people understand that you can create a local currency yourself and it's not going to cause inflation, the world's not going to end, and in time you can slowly then start to de-link and you've got an independent currency that you can then loan to build new local production? That's the long-term plan of Berkshire's. So this question of resilience is, in the future, will we have lots of other currencies? Any of you here from Europe, think about Greece. Should Greece bring back its local currencies like now? I would. Okay, for Greece to Lewis, Amy.
Yeah, I should say I'm involved with the Lewis Pound, and my name's Amy. And I was thinking about what would be the most useful thing that I could talk about now, and as I'm relatively new to be involved with Lewis Pound, I thought it would probably be most useful to focus on some of the experiences that I've had on the ground and the feedback that I've been getting both from the public and from traders, so that's what I'm going to do. But just to give you a bit of a practical update on where the Lewis Pound is at the moment, first of all, it's in its second issue at the moment. So we have £1 notes, £5, £10 and £21 notes, and there's about £15,000 worth of notes actually in circulation at the moment. And there's roughly 150 traders who accept Lewis Pounds, and there are 9 issuing points, which are places where you can exchange your sterling for Lewis Pounds or Lewis Pounds for sterling. And also, I want to kind of take the approach that it's important to have some reflection on where the Lewis Pound is, where it's going next. As Ben was saying, they're having similar experiences with the Totnes Pound. So to focus first of all on things that are going well, and then I'm going to talk about some of the challenges that we're facing as well. So I think it's really helped to raise awareness around local trade and some of the issues around wine. That's really important, and it's got a really fantastic reputation, the Lewis Pound. And there was a big media coverage of it, which is still really felt, I think, in the there's a great sense of town pride. There are issuing points in lots of the main areas in Lewis, making it much easier for people to use and get hold of Lewis Pound in the first place. And it's also supported by some of the main businesses in Lewis. So now I'm going to transport you to the farmer's market to talk about some of the experiences I've had there, because it happens monthly, first Saturday of the month, and we have a Lewis Pound stall there to kind of talk to people who are interested in finding out about the Lewis Pound, and we also act as an issuing point. And I've got some examples of some of the quite regular exchanges that I have with people when they come along and have a chat with us on the stall. So some people come along and they're very enthusiastic and say, "Oh, Lewis Pound, great! I've got some of those in my house somewhere. How's it going? Is it still working?" And then I have other people come along and they say, "Oh, brilliant, the Lewis Pounds, I'll buy some of those for my friends." So I say, "Okay, where does your friend live? Do they live in Lewis?" They say, "No, she lives in Totnes, Australia, America." If I sent her some, it might encourage her to come and spend them and then visit me at the same time. And still occasionally there are people who come along and they say, "Well, what's this all about then?" So I explain some of the aims behind the Lewis Pound, and they say, "Great, what brilliant idea," and I'll get the notes out and show them. And they say, "Oh, brilliant, they look like money." I say, "Well, they are money." And they say, "Go on, I'll buy some, give me 5 £1 notes, for example." Are there any kind of themes that you can see running in those exchanges that I've had with people in terms of attitude to the Lewis Pound or commitment to the Lewis Pound?
Treating it as a novelty rather than a currency.
Yeah?
It's a souvenir, isn't it? Mm. Like that and a stick of rock.
Okay. Mm. And anything else? I mean, that's not exactly what I was getting at, because there are lots of people who are very loyal to the Lewis Pound, these specific
plus that,
examples.
It's all playfulness about money.
Yeah.
Enjoying money and thinking about money in different ways.
Yeah. But I think it's also, people are very supportive, and they really recognise the value of it, and they get the idea, the ideology behind it. But it's just that balance of taking that to the next level and having people who really have the Lewis Pound as something that's ingrained within their everyday buying and spending patterns. And I think that's something that's really interesting to consider with a local currency, how to take it to that next level, especially after you've had this big swathe of media attention and a lot of people know about the existence of the currency and are very enthusiastic, but kind of 3 years down the line, maybe that's died down slightly, which has happened with circulation. There is a lull in the amount of Lewis pounds that are being circulated at the moment. And from the trader's perspective, as Ben said, there's definitely the practical issue of how time-consuming it is going around and building those relationships, because that's what's so key to it. If you want it to succeed, you really need to make sure that you've got those people on board and that they're supportive. Because it's very kind of like a, I suppose, dependent, the relationship between traders and users of the Lewis Pound. They're so interlinked. You want both to be on board and they really affect each other. And I've got another example for you from a different market. This time, it's a local food market, but this is to illustrate the point of circulation and, I suppose, the attitude of traders towards the Lewis Pound. So there, every Friday there's this market that happens, and it's often, again, this is a very specific example that I've chosen, but what happens is we've got the town hall, so people will come and get their Lewis pounds at the town hall, come to the market, and all the traders at the market accept the Lewis pound, and so customers will go around and spend their Lewis pounds with the traders, and the traders can pay for the price of their stall in Lewis pounds, and they could also give it out to customers in change, or as Ben said, there are these kind of different options that they've got, or they could go and spend it somewhere else. But the reality is that a lot of these traders don't live that close to Lewis. So from their perspective, it makes more sense for them to pay for the price of their stall in Lewis pounds. So then those Lewis pounds will be collected by the market manager, and then they end up being changed back at the town hall back into sterling. So that's what, it's kind of a closed-loop trading system that we've got going on, which that's a positive thing in itself, because it means we're keeping track of the money and we know where it's being spent, and it's staying within the local economy. It's not quite as large as you'd like a closed-loop trading system to be. But I think that it kind of illustrates how traders are willing to take this local currency, and they will support it, but to, because they've had so many years of giving it back to customers in change, and that can be quite a hard exchange to have. I mean, I've experienced a trader trying to give those pounds in change to a customer. If they get rejected and the customer says no, it's quite difficult, because that's a negative exchange they then had with a customer, certainly, so they're more reluctant to do it in the future. And I think generally that is one of the biggest challenges, to kind of manage people's perception of the currency and to try and turn verbal support into action to make sure that it's more ingrained within the local economy. And I think in order to do that, one of the key things is to really engage with the traders and to find ways to show that it really can help reduce costs and boost town pride, because those are really key things. And we've been thinking, or we've been talking, and
2 minutes.
2 minutes. Okay. To lots of different people to think about what is the most logical next step for Lewis. And immediately, what we've been focusing on is just having a subtle shift in the way that we talk about the Lewis Pound, and having the Lewis Pound as something that promotes local traders and local trades, regardless almost of whether those traders accept Lewis Pounds, because it needs to be really clear, I think, that message that we support local trade and local traders, and that's, they also happen to accept the Lewis Pounds. That's one of the things that we want to really try and make very clear and show to traders that there is a clear benefit of association with the local currency. And a bit further down the line, we've been talking about having some kind of a discounted scheme attached to the Lewis Pound, which would happen at the point of issue. So when you change your sterling to Lewis Pound, you would have maybe a 5% or 10%. Discounts, that would mean effectively all exchanges in Lewis Pounds are discounted. And also trying to combat that issue of traders not feeling they can do anything with their Lewis Pound except for changing at an issuing point. So looking into things, as will be mentioned later, like negotiating, talking to the council about it, accepting taxes in Lewis Pounds. I'm potentially looking into e-currency as a way of facilitating the whole process of using a local currency. And I'm going to draw to a close now. But if you've got any questions, I'm aware that there are lots that I haven't spoken about, so do come and have a chat with me. I've got some examples of those cards if anyone would like to see them. So yeah, just have a chat.
So again, any questions of clarification rather than general debate? Yeah.
Oh, is anyone employed to help run it in Lewis?
I am. I'm the only person who's appraised employed as a board of directors. It's set up as a community interest company, and I'm there part-time.
Part-time. How many days do you think would be the best number of days?
How many days? I mean, it could be an infinite task, I suppose, depends how far reaching.
So if you're part-time, I mean, do you think that's not enough?
I think there is a lot to do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But part-time's a good start. And, you know, how many traders have you got? How big an area? You're talking about a county-wide one. But in a small town, might be okay. Ben?
You could ask that question another way. If you were working 5 days a week, would you be spending your time fiddling, twiddling your thumbs much?
No, I think there's always things to do.
When you said about a clear benefit, and Michael from Liverpool, when you said about a clear benefit to the traders and so, can you expand, you know, what were the components of that? How did you sell it to the world?
Do you mean when I was talking about having a shift in...
How did you get their buy-in? Do people come back? Is it a repeat business? Is there a loyalty part to it? Is it about reputation? You know, what's in it for the traders?
Oh, in general, as a scheme?
Yeah.
Well, the idea is that one of the ideas is it's there to support them as a local business, as local businesses, because it's a way of keeping track of where that money is and encouraging people to come back to the traders. And
kind of, so like a loyalty scheme?
Yeah.
So just to be clear, so that would work, but the local trader would think, well, if I give them Lewis Pounds back, then they're not going to go and spend their Lewis Pounds in Tesco's.
Yeah.
They're going to come back and spend it.
Yeah.
Maybe. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just sort of developing on that, the sort of the local money multiplier, the idea that money leaks out or it stays in, Most people get it, they do understand that, and very, very difficult to quantify. But it does, you know, for a local trader, they do get that.
Same as a loyalty card in that respect. Mm. Okay, thank you. Simon?
Thanks, Bruce, for that. I'm Simon Moore. I'm one of seven directors of the Brixton Pound. For those of you who don't know Brixton, it's an inner London district. It's always had something of a radical kind of status, very independently minded people. It's very diverse, rich cultural mix of different ethnicities and classes. Plenty of poverty in the area as well. So the Brixton Pound developed out of transition town Brixton, and we launched in September 2009 with a paper currency traded one-to-one with sterling. It comes in four denominations, 1, 5, 10 and 20. And it was launched with about 80 businesses. We now have about 210 businesses who accept the pound. There's currently roughly £35,000 of Brixton pounds out there in the wild. I wouldn't like to say circulation, because as Ben and Amy have implied, there are quite a lot of people who take alternative currencies and treat them as a souvenir and put them on their wall. But that's fine, because then we get something called leakage, effectively. Yeah. We get that money, so it may potentially turn out to be a source of revenue. One thing I should just mention as well, I mean, Brixton is, like so many parts of the UK, is at risk of becoming a clone town. High streets dominated by the major brands. However, at the moment, there's still a large number of independent businesses off the high street. So obviously, as with the other schemes, we're very much trying to promote them and persuade people to think about where they're spending their money. The slogan of the Brixton Pound is money that sticks to Brixton, and that again is implying the local multiplier effects that Amy and Ben were talking about. Just to talk about the successes and the failures, and then I'll tell you about what we're planning. In terms of successes, very much like the other schemes, massive media attention. Lambeth Council estimated that the positive publicity that Brixton has had would have cost them about 150k in advertising. So that's quite interesting. It's been a talking point. It's facilitated conversation. So that's all good. We have some very supportive businesses and people who really get what we're trying to do. However, the failures, I think ideally we wanted to encourage greater spending in local businesses, and obviously you can do the maths. If there's £35,000 out there, Brixton has about 60,000 residents, so we've not made any dent in the economy really. So at the moment, our scheme is it's a poster boy, if you like. It's trading on pride and giving people something to believe in, but in terms of economic impact, it's very marginal indeed. We were entirely volunteer staffed. We now have one person in a paid role who's kind of project funded, and I'll talk a bit more about that in a minute. So we now have a coordinator who is working 5 days a week. It's an enormous amount of work trying to keep track of 200 businesses. They close and then open under a new name all the time. Some of them decide that the scheme's not really working for them and they'll stop accepting it, but they won't tell us. So it's absolutely endless. We have a volunteer team of about 20. And so we'll get kind of reports from people, oh, this business is closed, or these guys aren't accepting it anymore. It's changing all the time. One of the problems that we've established, and I think I hope the other currency practitioners won't mind me saying so, but there's a lack of true incentive for businesses and customers with our current model. So until we find a model where there are either discounts across the board or other incentives, it's very difficult to get people to start using this currency if we'd really like them to use it as a living, breathing currency that you spend as a part of your weekly shopping, buying, whatever. So all of this has driven us to start looking for how we can innovate and provide those kind of incentives and also give businesses more opportunities to actually re-spend the currency rather than just changing it back, which is of course what most of those businesses that are taking any quantity of the currency end up doing. So for the last 6 to 12 months we've been looking very seriously at an electronic currency, a virtual currency if you will, using a mobile phone payment system, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. We've also been talking to Lambeth Council, who've been quite supportive of the scheme. They're big fans of it, but they haven't actually put their money where their mouth is yet. But there is potential to possibly, we think, get car parking fines as something that can be paid using Brixton Pounds. Business rates is a bit more tricky because at the moment it's still a national tax, although there's a move to collect that locally. So we're hopeful that maybe in the next 6 to 12 months we'll have a greater tie-in with the council and businesses will actually be able to spend their Brixton Pounds on. A lot of the interaction with the council relies on us having an electronic scheme, because as any of you who had any dealings with councils will know, councils don't do cash. It's simply not something we can deal with. Councils typically outsource their financial and tax and revenue collection. And if you want to interface with those outsourced partners, then you've got to have means of electronic payments and technology. So just to talk a bit more about the electronic currency side of things, we've been working in a consortium also with the Bristol Pound, so Kieran's going to touch on some of this as well, I think, with the New Economics Foundation, which is a radical economics think tank, and also one of the Brixton Pounds directors happens to work for the New Economics Foundation. And we've also been working with some currency specialists in the Netherlands. It's an organisation called COIN, who have implemented a number of time banking and other complementary currency schemes around the world. And they've basically been helping us construct some models that might work as a new currency. We've pretty much fixed on the concept of a mobile payment scheme, probably using text messages. So you'd be able to go into a shop and then you'll buy something, you'll send a text message to our central number with the name of the shop or a short code and the amount that you're paying them. And then a confirmation message will fly off to the shop interview, confirming that the payment's gone through. So that's likely to be the main payment mechanism. The major problem, however, is the legal side of things. One of the interesting things about the cash-based currencies is that there's an implication in the eyes of the law that it's about just getting. We like to think of it as a currency and cash, but if it really was a currency and cash, then we could be prosecuted. So really it's a voucher scheme. As soon as you move to an electronic currency and allowing people to store money, or sorry, store value in an online system, you're then in a territory that's licensed by the FSA, as was, or the Bank of England, as it's now going to be. So we're currently negotiating our way through some fairly deep water. The EU have just passed a new bill, which is called the Small E-Money Bill, which basically legislates how organisations that run what they call stored value systems, online systems, work. The problem with that is no one's applied for a Small E-Money licence in the UK yet, so nobody, including the FSA, really knows how it works. So it's quite possible that the Brixton pound or the Bristol pound may well be a test case if we go down that route. Lots and lots of interesting things that you can do with an electronic model. You can obviously have a bonus scheme, as Amy was talking about, where you add on a bonus when somebody pays in. You can have transaction fees. You can basically have what's missing for all of us, I think, which is a revenue model, which is key to having a sustainable scheme long term. Exactly which bits of that model you can implement, how you can charge transactions and so on and so forth, may well be dictated by what comes out of the legal research that we're doing. So there's a lot of question marks at the moment, but I'll be happy to talk about those and to discuss those in more detail later on. I think that's pretty much it.
Questions?
Yep. Questions or clarification on the debate?
Using test messaging?
Yeah.
So what sort of platform are we going to use for that? Is that one central system, or is that going to be a distributed database?
So it will be, we'll be using some software called Cyclos, which some of you may be familiar with. Cyclos is a complementary currency open source software package, and then hooking that up with an SMS gateway. So in fact, that's a service company that sends and receives SMS messages on our behalf.
But are you seeing this as one central system or a model that could be done?
So the idea that the consortium of NEF, Lambeth Council, Bristol Pound, Brixton Pound and Coin are working on is to create a service infrastructure that can be used by many complementary currency schemes. So yes, it would be one central system, but you'd be able to have your own your own kind of silo, if you like, within that.
Using your database infrastructure?
Yeah, that's right.
If the software went live according to plan, when would the first electronic transaction take place?
Ideally, we're hoping for the end of September, but an awful lot will depend on our interaction with the FSA over the next month. So it's quite possible that will get delayed. And I haven't even mentioned credit unions, which I'll leave to Kieran to talk about.
I just wanted to know if the Oyster card is similar stored by the system and subject to those rules.
Subject to those rules because there's only one thing you can buy with it. So basically, the small e-money license has exemptions. You can either have exemptions on the basis of limited goods that you can buy. So mobile phone, credit, or the Oyster scheme is an example. There's only one thing you can buy with it. Or you can have an exemption on geographical area. So for example, a shopping centre might have a loyalty card scheme, and that's fine, because that's in a defined area.
Okay, thanks a lot. Let's move on to, because remember we've got a good half an hour at tables to deal with detail. I've got a lot of questions about the resilience of one platform, which I'd like to discuss. But Kieran, the last session.
Okay, probably all feeling a little bit...
Should we just stand up for a second first? Around
it's going to be fun.
We've got five person next to you. Punching, digging, spying, biting
is off the... And back. Okay, Kieran.
Okay, so... but all the things that have been coming up, listening to what people have been talking about, the whole thing about the positive thing about it, raising a lot of awareness about the whole point of supporting the local economy, we could see those benefits straight away when we first had a meeting in the sort of Money and Economics Forum a couple of years ago in Bristol, which was part of the Transition Bristol sort of activities. But then we realised quite quickly, talking to some of the other groups, some of these things about actually if you want that scale and depth and the potential transformative power of a real currency in the local economy, we have to do something different. And we were looking historically to see how currencies had come along and, you know, go back to pieces of eight, Spanish silver, that transformed the global economy. And one of the things about that, and then when paper came along, again, had a transformative effect on the way people used money. So we were thinking that one of the very important parts of it would be, have we got the right technology right now for the way people do transactions right now? So it seemed really important to have an electronic means of payment. And then if we're going to have an electronic means of payment, why not take the advantage of doing something that isn't being done yet, but is already an established technology that everybody's using for other kinds of information exchange. And so mobile phones is the obvious one. So that's how we, that's where we kicked off at a workshop maybe about a year and a half ago now, this plan for Transition Network to join with NEF and with COIN to try and support a system that could be used in that way. And Bristol and Brixton are going to, the idea is to pilot that first so that it will be available, as Simon was saying, for anybody else who then subsequently wants to use it. There are some big barriers that Simon has touched on. Some of those we're hoping to get round by establishing a working partnership with our credit union in Bristol. So that helps us in terms of all the transactions that happen come under the purview, that legally speaking, of the local credit union. They're already a bank. They fall under the government guarantee scheme. So any deposits that are made when people buy there, because it's a sterling backed model that we're starting with in Bristol, where people will, there'll be a big deposit of sterling which reflects the amount of Bristol pounds out there in the economy. And so getting that bit right, getting the technology right, and getting the legal and security bit right by working with the credit union still leaves us with a huge amount of work to do in terms of all the usual things about talking to traders, and then can we get the local authority on board. So we just started giving talks and building relationships with different people around the city, and just building awareness of the whole issue of why you might even want to build something like this. And so we presented a lot about the problems of the international finance, the leaky economy, the way that so much money that goes through big companies ends up going up through vertical sort of management structures and then out into the offshore tax havens, and that money is lost to the local economy. And that was, as Ben was saying, something that was quite important. People kind of get intuitively, and I think a lot of independent business people really think, yeah, I work hard, I'm really grafting to make my business work. And if a lot of the value that's created in that just ends up offshore, I'm a bit pissed off about that. And it's a really positive way to respond to that. And also in Bristol, a bit like Brixton, it's got a very diverse culture. And we knew that looking at what's happening with other currencies, that what's really important to get that supply chain thing working is getting that diversity of businesses and suppliers on board. And we, to some degree, felt we had an advantage in Bristol, because there's quite a number of different areas across Bristol that still have a lot of independent traders and independent suppliers who are interested and are natural allies for the system. So we did some consultation with them to start with. So we did some more detailed consultation with about 50 businesses at B2B events, and then subsequently another 20 with one-to-one discussions about whether they thought it would work for them having a local currency. And then that gave us the platform to then go to the local authority. So we built, just sort of review that, but we built sort of an awareness about why you might want a currency, which I guess people in this room would probably be there already. And then we used that to then sort of, that sort of groundswell of interest to build a team of people who could then go out and talk to businesses. So we were building our capacity all the way. It started with just a couple of us out of a forum meeting. We went out and did talks, had a sign-up sheet. People said, I'm interested, I'd like to help. And then we ended up with a team of really talented and capable people. We've got probably 8 people on the core team. We've got 3 interns that come via Forum for the Future. And it's all because we've just, as we've gone, invited people in all the time and listened to what they have to say about why they think it's a good thing. So we've built that capacity as we've gone, and that's enabled us to give quite a convincing presentation now to the local authority, who then said, okay, they're a bit nervous at first, and said, well, how about we do a feasibility study, and we look with you as we go about how it would work, and we brought them on board into the process of saying, is it feasible? So it was a question that we started with the local authority. If it's not feasible, then I don't want to bother with it. You know, I don't want people to think I'm a total nutcase that wants to do this, whatever. I only want to do this if I really think it has a chance of making a difference and working. So that was our kind of starting point with them. So did they think it could work for them? So we did a feasibility study. We got a little bit of money from them. To help make that happen, there's kind of, you know, a local authority, especially with a city, is a many-headed beast. It's not just one thing. You don't just go and talk to the local authority. There's loads of people with different interests, different ideas, and different political persuasions. So we thought it was really important to build with natural allies there first, and the kind of the sustainability people get it a little bit more easily. But actually, we found that the most natural territory was not with sustainability people. although they sort of got it, but the people who got it straight away are people who run the markets, and they work for the local authority, they run markets and they work with local traders, and the people who work in local regeneration. So we worked with the local regen officers and started talking to the people who run all the local markets. They're going, oh, this is great for us, we love this, this works, it raises awareness, maybe it could help keep some of that money we keep pouring into the more deprived areas from going straight back out again. Because it's also, from a political point of view, building in that understanding of how it addresses sort of financial exclusion and more problems of deprivation was quite important politically in Bristol. So we spent probably a good year doing that work subsequently, just after deciding that we needed something a bit different than just the paper currency that had gone before. We recognise the value of paper currency, it's fantastic, and everybody's really interested in it in Bristol. It's a big artistic engagement opportunity, and Bristol's full of arty people who, you know, we want to get all their ideas and use them to create a big publicity campaign to say what should we be representing about Bristol culture on these notes. And I'm sure the other guys have had a similar experience about that is a point at which you really raise a lot of awareness, but also you raise quite a lot of expectation. So we wanted to kind of try and do this twin track approach of launching the notes at the same time as we are at least doing a sort of getting the vast, a workable number, a critical mass of businesses on board for the electronic system. And have I been talking for, how long have I been talking for? Another minute.
Yeah.
Okay. So where we're at now, having done that and agreed to sort of work on the feasibility study with the local authority, is that we've had, in principle, agreed with them that they will work on two strands with us. One, their procurement policy, because that makes the whole thing work at scale more immediately. And that gives a lot of the smaller traders around the city confidence. So if they know that some of the larger tenders will be going out there with the council saying in a way which they understand their way around European law better than we ever will, saying, we'd like you to consider the option of taking payment in this, and that might improve your chances of winning a tender. Mm. That's something that they are now prepared to do. And we've taken a long time sort of developing those conversations with people in their procurement department. And at the same time, we've worked with their finance people to say, the feasibility of accepting, let's just, on a completely theoretical basis, is it theoretically possible that you'd accept business rates? And they said, well, of course it's theoretically possible, but no. First meeting we went into, the guy who's the head of, director of finance came in, and he had a sort of pad that thick, which included a lot of the stuff we'd sent him, but he just had pages and pages of reasons why they could not do it. And he sat there like that with a piece of paper and said, okay, well, how about if we did it for you? You just give us your rubber stamp approval that we can act on your behalf. We'll collect the taxes and we'll hand them over to you. And they said that basically threw out all his objections out the window. And they said, well, I don't see why we couldn't. Yeah, okay then. So we then provided them with the process of how we thought we would collect tax via the credit union and then pay it across to the. To the local authority as sterling, so there's no difference to them. We just get the advantage of massively capitalising our operations because we can potentially collect millions and millions in tax, and we can collect it whenever we like, and we only have to pay it to them at the very last minute when it's due. So then we can have this nice big float which capitalises our operation, and that works very well for us. And most of this, as Simon was referring to, is really important. It gives you the opportunity to make a business model where you can charge transaction fees and transactions fees aren't a problem generally for traders if they think they're going to get more business. If they think they're going to get more business through a well-run scheme, they'll go for it, and they don't mind 3 or 4% being charged for each transaction because they think they're extra, it's extra business that they wouldn't have otherwise got. So that's the key for them.
Okay, great. We've got another half hour. So what I'd suggest we do is we have the four speakers each have a table in each corner of the room, and we can go around, open space, talking to whoever we want to talk with. I was going to offer one, but I don't think I am now. So I think I'll let Amy talk more about the Lewis Pound gap. Okay, so Amy talk about the Lewis Pound.
And where are you going to be? Do you want to position yourself in a corner or something? Should we do that right now so people can...
Yeah. What about the Danish?
Can we just hear while we're looking at the different systems? Is it possible to hear?
Okay.
I'll try to be brief. I read your book 1 or 2 years ago. I live on a small island with 500 people, and I decided at the time that there was no need to have a local currency because it's customary that we help each other and we don't necessarily expect to that favor is returned. Anyway, people told me, and I realized that there are other reasons for having a local currency, like rising awareness, etc. So anyway, we launched it a month ago.
Wow.
The smallest denomination in many currencies is a small copper coin. That is in Danish called red shrimp. If you are broke, you haven't got a red shrimp. So the smallest unit here has a picture of red shrimp. Yeah. It's has the value corresponding to £2. Here's the other one, 5 units corresponding to £10.
Yeah.
A blue banana. And one reason for choosing that is that it's illegal to make local currency in Denmark. Therefore, these are not, it's not money, it's a reusable receipt.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you buy something in the shop, you have a piece of paper which prints the amount. If you buy it, if you've been to the shop buying something for somebody else, you would take that piece of paper, give it back and say, yes, I spent 17 and a half, can you please hand me the money, and you swap the receipt for the money. And that is a kind of voucher. So that's why we hope that we are not going to court for this. But if we do, it'll be a strange court case with red shrimps and blue bananas. Anyway, this small island is fighting for its existence. It has one school, it has one shop, and if we have more awareness of our problems, it'll be a big plus. We have 9 people or small enterprises willing to receive these. We have one volunteer every Friday willing to change, or you can buy them from there. The backside is special because there's space to write a comment. So it can move from person to person, and you can write your comment, and in the end you can see what people think about it. I think I've used more of these than anybody else. It's very difficult to get it going, but we have lots of time. But, we have printed an amount.
Shall we invite you to have a table and then carry on? Because I'd like to hear a bit more about it.
Yes,
We've got some 25 minutes left. Thanks a lot for that.
Good.
Okay, so shall we have Amy in one corner? Ben, you want to talk about the nuts and bolts.
The nuts and bolts. I'll be with our accountant, Sally, and we'll be in this corner.
Okay. Simon, what do you want to focus on?
I'll focus on virtual currencies, e-currencies, the models, the technology.
Okay.
Anything anyone wants to ask me about?
Where are you going to be?
I'll go
in this corner.
No,
here.
I'm in that corner.
How are you?
I'll go in that corner.
Nice.
Sure.
What's over there?
So I'll talk about, I'm happy to talk about how we've built up relationships and who we've worked with to deliver the project.
And you want to be in that corner?
This one here?
Yeah, okay. Denmark, Want to be in the middle there?
Yes,
okay. People want to talk about this or not. If anybody would like to talk about any of the American currencies, like Ithaca Owls or Berkshires, they come and talk to me. Okay, so law of 2 feet, move around.
I've got a Brixton pound here, which I'm afraid is a souvenir. I just think they're great. I'm happy to leave it here if anyone wants to have a look.
Shame.
And I'll trust it.
So,
A friend of mine.
So, does everybody know where they're going? That's the fault. Bristol. This is the actual
There's a disabled toilet along there on the right.
Sterling than you would have done if you had 15 to 1. So it doesn't matter what, you know,
I haven't asked anyone, so I wasn't looking at you. Just the costs.
So,
most of the revenue is raised by the
Many of the people who support these
schemes
probably allowing you to allow
We'll have paper notes, and we'll have internet.
So what we make clear to business is
that if in the end we make a big profit, all that profit returns back to the system. So we're not there to be increasing the money of going to the profit or tax or money. We're there to benefit. This is their system.
Very small scale. You've got these guys that make it into the video. Well, have you seen what they look like?
It's a great idea. Yeah.
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 Okay, shall we get the chairs in the circle again and then just have a final walk around, yeah? Okay, let's get all the chairs just in the circle and then we'll have a final run around. Okay, so we've only actually got 5 minutes, so if people keep their comments brief and punchy, please. Just a chance to go around and if there's anything that anybody wants to say about what they've drawn from this, this discussion, any questions that are outstanding, anything anybody wants to comment, really, especially yours.
Anybody doing the mirage, you know, you think it's...
Stroud.
Yeah.
What about inflation? You know, artificially creating inflation. Anyone have any comments on that?
Too limited amount of currency to do it. If you look at Argentina, what they issued millions and millions and millions of the notes because the entire economy collapsed, and inflation was a major issue.
Creating inflation, stating that the currency is going to inflate at 20%, and then creating sufficient and restricting demand, increasing the supply and restrict demand, and just so you automatically, you don't have to tick it. Tick boxes or stick stamps or whatever it might be.
I don't know anyone who tried to create inflation.
Mm. That was Keynes's original idea.
Yeah, well, he said you need to create more money so there's more demand. You don't want to create inflation. If you create more money than there is in demand in the economy, you will get inflation. What people are concerned about is where there's too little money for the amount of activity that wants to go in the economy. Mm. So if Argentina was an example of where they printed millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of these notes, and you know, inflation was what they did kick off, so it's something to watch out with.
Mm.
Yeah?
What would you say about a county-wide currency rather
than... I was going to ask that to Amy, because that was one of the things that came up in Lewis, wasn't it? That is Lewis too small an area, and would a Sussex-wide currency be more appropriate? Or, you know, Totnes, is it too small? Would Devon be better?
I think it would answer essentially some of the problems of money. Well, the example that I gave at the market where the traders feel that they can't spend it because they live that bit further outside Lewis. So if you had a regional currency and it was easier for them to pay suppliers themselves if they live that bit further out, then yeah, I mean, it's something to look into.
It's actually something that's come up in Brixton as well. We've been talking to Lambeth, they're quite keen to get us to scale up to being a borough-wide scheme. Because even in Brixton, we kind of feel it's a bit too small. If you want to really encourage business-to-business trading and local sourcing, then you need a much wider pool.
It's funny, isn't it? Because like Lambeth is long and thin, and you've got Wandsworth and Southwark within a mile of Brixton, and the south of Lambeth, it's nothing to do with Brixton.
It's true,
where
but
people travel across the boroughs, don't they?
You have to have some kind of artificial barrier, I suppose.
And what do you think about Devon?
Well, it was interesting because it came up in talking to the credit union, because the credit union is wider, and if we're only going to work with them, then how are we going to manage that? So it's a question.
Because we have a number of towns in Somerset that are looking at setting up local currencies, and we're talking about it, but we're thinking, what's the benefits in each of them setting up a local one, or is it more worth setting up a county one that we could all plug into? You know, we don't know.
I think the question is where do the businesses that are likely to be using currency get their stuff from? And it's, you know, as you said, Brixton doesn't produce anything. If you get a county, are you likely to get enough circulations going where you can get business-to-business trades with each other? If you look at the German example, Rega does. It sort of operates in an area of Bavaria, and Chiemgau one, which is the local money, is in sort of the Bavarian area. It's about 100 square mile circle, and it's a natural area. The other point about Regiogeld is Bavarian identity. So there's certain parts of the world where you've got a regional identity that you can work with. So I can imagine, say, Yorkshire currency working because of Yorkshire identity. In a way that, I mean, Lewis, the South East, it's like the bit around London that isn't London. It doesn't there isn't an economic unit. It's not an economic unit in the way that Yorkshire is. So, as you know, like Avon, you can see that being a natural unit.
Yeah. I'll just say that Brixton does produce a lot of labour, and a lot of value is brought into the economy by people's time and work, and that's really important to remember, because currency is not just about buying stuff. It's about what people do, and that's a huge part of the economy. I don't know if it's a bigger part of the economy. I guess it probably is in somewhere like Brixton. It's important to remember that, and it's about recycling money through those kind of networks as well. But still, I can see that getting that supply chain right is a challenge, having a section of a city, which is kind of why we looked broadly across the supply chains in Bristol and seeing not even just Bristol. We're going to focus on getting businesses on board in the city because that's where they're concentrated. But we encourage it to people to see it as a regional currency. And it will reach out, we hope it will reach out. We don't put a barrier down so you can't spend it anywhere. It's the Bristol pound, and it's accepted for rates in Bristol. But, you know, it's, apart from that, anybody can accept it. And once you're in the southwest region,
and we might get to a place where there are regional currencies that might exchange with each other.
And eventually we could have a national currency.
Exchange.
I guess if the objective of the local currency is to build resilience, then the region that you're looking at should kind of cover the, you know, the resource footprint of your community. So like the work they've been doing in Stroud, you know, the agricultural footprint of the area, that could be the boundary of their local currency.
And if you're trying to grow a network land of suppliers, you look at your likely places where you'd like to get more coming in from them. And if you can include that, so that gives some validity to either East Sussex or Sussex, or the western bit of East Sussex, Brighton. You know, I don't know, but a wider area. I mean, the Lewis district is not too bad, but actually we're just Lewis town.
So it might be sort of economic districts, or the thing about Australia is bioregions.
Bioregions.
I think that's a very powerful idea of regions. And the other thing that looking to do in the States, in Berkshires, is they're looking to map what are the resources in their bioregion. What could they? How could they start to turn those resources into livelihoods for people? So the opposite example, they say there is a lot of woods, yet we don't make any furniture here. So that's an obvious thing. You can start to grow a furniture making industry in your area, and they want the Berkshire's currency. It's currently linked to the US dollar 1-to-1, but they see over 10-15 years when people start to see that this currency is actually used, they can then start to give loans to support the development of the sort of industries they want in their area. So then it becomes, it's not just a sort of town pride mechanism where that's fine, or sort of trade-to-trade between businesses, and that's fine. It's a way of deepening resilience and deepening localisation. And I think that that can be really, really powerful. And perhaps we've got to keep our eyes on that long-term goal, you know, 10 years down the line. So although it's hard work doing local currencies now, the payoff's going to be in 10 years' time when Lewis has got a currency and the rest of us haven't.
I think patience is one of the greatest things that we can have with these things, is that if you're there for a long period of time, it'll be tough at times and people won't be interested. If you stick at it and keep going, people eventually start coming to you, partly just because you've had the resilience yourself to keep going.
And your notes look great, and that's the thing that hasn't come up really.
Yeah.
You know, if you do a local currency scheme too quickly and your notes look like vouchers, it's a lot harder to get anyone to take them seriously. You look at Brixton pounds, and you look at the Lewis pounds, and the greatest respect, you look at Totnes or you look at Stroud, you can tell the difference. You know, the Brixton ones are just gorgeous.
Wait till you see our second issue. Yeah,
but you can't spend too little time and effort on that, because there's something about moneyness. You know, if everyone looks at it and thinks, ah, Monopoly money, you're dead in the water before you start. But if it really does say money in a serious way, that really matters.
How much did one of these cost to print?
Our entire print run was about 6k, I think. But we, for our second issue, which is coming out in September, we reckon we've managed to cut the cost of that in half by finding a different printer, which is quite interesting.
Give me his number.
Sorry?
Give me his number.
Moneyness costs. Yeah. So after the first print run, well, there's a second issue of the Totnes pounds, was £800. And we paid the printer in Totnes pounds as well.
Of course, so he's taking them off the press and putting them in.
Yeah.
So I'll just print another 800.
Okay.
So a query on where on the notes, there's the circulating around, and just wondering whether they wear out, whether they're
we had some
we
found that one of our versions, if it was in your back pocket and went into a washing machine, didn't come out looking very pretty. And yeah, that can make a difference, and that's going to cost as well. Isn't so the durability of the note,
well, does it cost? It only costs the price of the pay of the printer.
No, if I've just got a Totnes pound out of the bank and paid a quid for it and I ruin it, then that's money I've lost.
Well, don't you find people come and try and get it, try and claim it back? That's what happens with that. People come and they produce these kind of draggled pieces, and they expect us to exchange them.
Because the bank will, won't it?
The bank will, yeah.
Yes.
And we do. Yeah, we do. I mean, it doesn't happen very often, but they do wear out slightly quicker than.
And it's also the difference between if you're on a small island and you're looking to do something where it's between a community and people know each other, then you probably don't need to worry about it so much. But if you're in a place where there's less trust. There are scams in the world. You know, you've got to be careful that people don't think that's happening. In Argentina, they were very cheeky. The typical Argentines. The states printed their own national currency for patacones, and they paid their workers in patacones. And they purposefully designed the notes so they fall apart. And they said, in a year's time, in a year's time, give you a peso for your patacones. Knowing there's no way that patacones would survive. So they've basically given themselves a loan for a year. So that's the sort of thing, if global currencies get successful, people will do. You know, so it's a case of designing it, these currencies, so it's easier to try to forge the real thing than it is to do your one. But it's something to think about. Okay, it's 4:05. Thank you to all the speakers. And let's hope next year when we get together there's a few more currencies going in there. Now there's a Morgan one on the way and an Edinburgh one on the way. Are there any other ones on the way? Morgan and Edinburgh.
Edinburgh is somewhere expected.